Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Peter Gore, Main Street Solutions Government Affairs Consultant, and today we're talking about the newly enacted Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and key information that employers need to understand as they navigate future compliance with the law. Welcome, Peter. Thank you so much for being here.
Tani, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, oftentimes I think people, you know, when we're doing this show, a lot of people know we are based in Maine generally. And I try to stay away from topics that are limited to a Maine audience. One of the reasons, however, I think it's so important for us to do this show is because while the statute itself protects Maine employees, anyone who's providing services in Maine, I think it has a much more far-reaching implication because of the breadth of the statute itself. And I'm looking forward to you and I talking about that kind of during the course of the next hour. And you and I have had multiple conversations about this topic. So I'm sure we are easily going to fill up an hour of time. But with that, as anyone who listens to the show regularly knows, I always like to make sure that our guests are able to provide listeners with a little bit of background about themselves. So why did Tani ask Peter to be the person who comes on the show to talk about this topic? So can you give our listeners a little bit about of background concerning you, Peter?
Sure thing. And that's a great question, Tani. Why would you have me on? So I've joined Main Street Solutions just about a year ago, December. And prior to that, I spent 29 years with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce representing the business community in front of the legislature, the governor, state agencies, and the public. I was the executive vice president, and prior to that, I was the vice president for advocacy at the chamber. And so I've been a lobbyist in Augusta for 35 years. Prior to joining the chamber, I was with the Maine Department of Human Services, not DHHS, just DHS. And I was their director of legislative and public affairs. So I have a long experience with public policy in the State House. While I was at the chamber, I primarily represented the chamber and the business community on labor issues, workplace issues, so HR issues, the workers' compensation, healthcare, some judiciary issues if they involve the Maine Human Rights Commission. So clearly, my background is on HR issues, and the chamber retained me last session while I was at Main Street Solutions to represent them. And thus the paid family medical leave program came up and I was immersed in that on their behalf and the bill and law as it came out. So, you know, there's probably more blame or more credit, however you want to look at that, around this law. So that's me in a nutshell.
I promise you we're not going to give blame unless you are part of the legislature itself. I think those are the only times in which we want to either say blame or, you know, in some cases people are going to say benefit, either or. But I always love hearing people's background because there's even parts of your background that I was unaware of that you just shared. So I think that's very helpful. Maine's paid family medical leave program was something that had been, I guess, talked about for the last couple of legislative sessions, and there had been dialogue concerning potentially waiting to see if there was a federal movement to provide some type of paid family leave in some format. Do you have any understanding as to why the Maine legislature took the step now, as opposed to potentially waiting for the federal government to do something that was broader and that would have more far-reaching effects.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of multi-systemic issues that were at play, you know, political and programmatic, this legislative session around this issue. To begin with, there was a commission that was appointed by the legislature. They met for about a year, maybe even a little longer than that, to take a look at what other states were doing around paid family medical leave, look at other programs, how they were funded, who was taxed, what the benefits looked like, et cetera, et cetera. The commission was made up of legislators and representatives who were proponents of paid family medical leave and representatives of the business community. They worked, as I said, for about a year, and their recommendations ultimately provided the legislature with a framework for the law that's currently in place. But at the same time the commissioner was at work, the Maine People's Alliance, which is a progressive organization that operates out of Portland primarily, had formed this coalition for paid family medical leave. And it was made up of a variety of different employee advocate groups, and they collected the necessary signatures to put the issue, their version of paid family medical leave, on the ballot for, no, you know, in November, or it would have been coming up. I think it would have been, yeah, it'd be coming up. So the legislature had a decision to make. When that happens, they can enact the proposal if they want, or they can create a competing measure. But the People's Alliance didn't submit their signatures. Instead, they waited to see what the legislature would do this session, because they had time. They had until July of this year to submit their signatures. And had they submitted their signatures, we'd have been looking at something in this past November. So the legislature, they could have said to the People's Alliance, we're not going to do anything on this. Go ahead and submit your signatures. But they chose not to. They very deliberately decided they wanted to enact this at the legislative level and have their fingerprints on the law and what it looked like.
No, I think that background's really helpful in understanding, kind of as we move forward, how we get to where we're at. For those of you who may just be joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Peter Gore, Senior Government Relations Specialist at Main Street Solutions. And today we're talking about the newly enacted Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and some of the key information that employers need to better understand the act itself and then figure out how to navigate future compliance with the law. You know, Peter, before we get started talking about the issue, even though we've already, you know, broadly talked about it, can you give listeners a very brief overview of the law? And I laugh when I say a brief overview because it is such a technical law. But generally, what are we talking about as benefits when we're talking about Maine's paid family medical leave?
So, broadly speaking, in a very simple way, any employee in the state, provided they meet the very bare bones eligibility requirements, which is earnings of about $6,200 in the previous four quarters, will qualify. And you can be a self-employed individual as well. So it's full-time, part-time, self-employed individual for up to 12 weeks of family leave in a year, in an application year, which is defined as 12 months, or 12 weeks of medical leave in that same time period. Your wages will be replaced depending on how much money you make at either a rate of 90% if you make less than 50% of the state's maximum average weekly wage, or 66% if you make over 50% of the state's average weekly wage. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And we can get into some the minutiae, but it's for family members, birth, adoption, et cetera, et cetera. We can go into some of that as well, but that's the bare bones of what the program will do.
So I'm sure we have some listeners who are saying, okay, Tani, well, this sounds very similar to obligations that we currently have under federal law. So maybe this isn't groundbreaking, right? But Let's dig in a little bit about some of the definitions and some of the aspects of this law that may be a little bit different. I always laugh and I say to people, the thing about being a lawyer is I don't create laws. That's not my job. The legislature does that. Sometimes a judge will do it, but I do not have that benefit. My only job is to help individuals comply with a law. And one of the things that oftentimes is frustrating for a lawyer is vague laws or laws that are not super clear, so that it is difficult to determine kind of what a law means or how to interpret it. And interestingly enough, I think this is one of those laws, at least as it stands right now. Under the statute, you mentioned that you could take leave to care for yourself or for a family member. Is a family member the same as what we're looking at under F federal FMLA guidance, or is it broader or different?
It's broader and it's different. To simplify it, yeah. So it's all those things that you would take leave under the existing unpaid FMLA statute, but it also includes things like a de facto grandparent, a de facto child, a de facto parent. When you let's see what else. De facto siblings, it's a biological sibling, adoptive sibling, foster sibling, step sibling, or a de facto sibling. We don't know what any of those de factos mean. And it also includes what's known as an affiliate relationship. And an affiliate relationship has been enacted in other states, but basically it's someone that it's, and I'll read from the definition. Design as designated by the covered individual in accordance with rule, which is important, an individual with whom the covered individual has a significant personal bond that is or is like a family relationship, regardless of biological or legal relationship. It's very unclear what an affiliate relationship is going to be, but a literal example could be your roommate. You're a longtime roommate that perhaps you've shared an apartment or a house for a couple of years. That would probably qualify as a affiliate relationship. The whole de facto question is really unclear, and that may be easier to sort out. And we can discuss where this affiliate relationship is going to go, Tawny, if you want, or is supposed to go. But that is a real concern for a lot of employers.
I mean, and it's interesting because it seems as though we're going to be looking at rulemaking, but we're also going to be looking at some type of process in which I presume before a condition kind of begins or that there's a need to take leave as a result of it, that you'll have to identify who this person with a significant personal bond is. And can it be more than one person? Are we looking at only one person at a time? Or do you give a list of here are people I have significant personal bonds with, and who knows what the future holds. But if it's any of these people, I'm going to be looking to take time away from work. So, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we're going to be looking for some heavy regulations as to what some of these terms mean.
I mean, rulemaking is going to play a huge part in how this law is actually implemented and is workable in the workplace. One of the things that are going to be addressed through rule and what we were told when we were having some preliminary negotiations around this was that it would be modeled after what California did, which essentially says that an individual will designate one person as in an affiliate relationship. But here's the thing, is that one person a year? Or one person over the life of the or the term in which the employee is employed at that particular place of business. All that will end up being determined through rulemaking. We don't know right now.
I feel like I'm going to throw you a softball right before we go to a break, but I think it's really important because sometimes I fear that we have people who tune out after the first couple of minutes because they're like, great, Tawny, but I only have four employees. So it's great that you all are talking about this, but it doesn't apply to me. Who is obligated to comply with this law? Is it only larger employees, or are we looking at small businesses as well?
Great question. Very important, change in how FMLA will impact Maine businesses. Currently, it's 15 or more in the state level and 50 or more at the with the federal law. This is every employer, regardless of size. So if you have two employees, you're still going to need to qualify, or you will still qualify as an employee to take paid family medical leave. Huge change from the way it operates in the state now, and it will present myriad of problems and challenges for smaller businesses.
And what about if I'm a Nebraska company and I have some remote workers and I have one person in Maine? Is this going to apply to that Nebraska employer?
It will. I believe it will. It applies to all sole practitioners and independent contractors. So you will pay a tax, your payroll tax will go towards your benefits. Your employer may not pay that that tax, but you as the employee will. It probably will include those individual employees that are operating here in Maine.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin, and all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation. 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free Silver American Eagle coin.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Peter Gore, Senior Government Relations Specialist at Main Street Solutions. And today we're talking about the newly enacted Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and key information that employers need to understand as they navigate future compliance with the law. So before we took the break, Peter had talked about who this applies to and some concerning maybe gaps that we have so far in some of the definitions that we're definitely going to need rulemaking on. You know, Peter, when we say we're going to need rulemaking on, what's the timeline for this law? When does it take effect?
The state will begin collecting the payroll tax money from the employers and employees in 2025. This coming year in 2024 is when much of the rulemaking will take place that will set the program up. And then benefits are expected to be paid starting in January of 2026. But there is an extension period. If they don't have enough money and it's a feeling that they're not capitalized enough, they wouldn't start until May of 2026. So there's, actually, it seems like a long ways away, but it's really not. There's a lot of work that's got to be done.
Well, and the other part of it that goes to this is, I mean, you're talking about funding and the ability to be able to be capitalized sufficiently. Let's talk a little bit about how this law is funded. Where does the money come from that's going to provide this benefit?
Well, for folks that don't follow the legislature, the actual enacting language for paid family medical leave was included in the supplemental budget that was passed. It was done so in part because the Department of Labor was given $28 million as startup monies to begin the process of hiring a staff and putting together the program. The actual capitalization for the payment of benefits is calculated to be roughly $360 million. And that will be paid for, as I indicated earlier, through a tax, and it's a payroll tax. And it depends on how big you are as a business and as how much you pay. It's a 1% payroll tax, and it's divided between employers and employees. So if you're an employer with more than 50 employees, the employee will pay 0.5%. And you, the employer, will pay 0.5% for a total of 1%. But if you have fewer than 15 employees, then you, as an employer, will pay nothing, and the employee will pay 0.5%. So again, 15 or more businesses, employees at a business, you split the tax between you as a business and your employees. If you have fewer than 15 employees, only the employee pays.
And it's interesting because while I think the Maine's Paid Family Medical Leave Act does go further than a lot of states, thankfully, we're not the first state that's ever instituted a paid family medical leave program or policy. And it's interesting because there are things that we can learn from other states that have come before us, or if you're a large company that maybe operates in one of those states, things that you might already be doing. And it's interesting because there's that benefit, right, that you can potentially, for smaller employers, to pay, to only pay the 0.5%. But it'll be interesting to see if under rulemaking, employers could pay the whole amount. Could an employer pay a full 1%, not subtract 0.5% from employees and use it as an employee benefit to attempt to recruit people to say, hey, you're still going to get the state benefit, but you're not going to pay the 0.5%. Thoughts on that, Peter?
I suspect that they will, in the rulemaking, that they will allow that, because there was a discussion around earned paid leave and, you know, could an employer simply front end the 40 hours for the employee if they want to? And the department, through rulemaking, said yes. I do think it's important when you talk about learning from other states. I'm not sure how much the legislature either, depending on how you look at it, either did or didn't, because in our law is the most, has the most generous paid family medical leave benefits in New England. And we are the only Northern New England state to require employers to contribute through taxes to the entire program. New Hampshire, Vermont, even Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, none of them require employer contributions. We have the largest amount of employer contributions in Northern New England.
Like I said, kind of at the beginning, right, Peter, one of the reasons we're doing this is because it is so important for employers to understand kind of the larger implications that this has. And while we talked about the timeline for the law taking effect, it does have other repercussions in which, yes, you know, This episode is airing for the first time in January 2024, but it's important for HR professionals and finance team members to understand this from a budgetary standpoint as they move into the next couple of years as to what the implications will be on their budget, revenues, kind of all of those different things.
One thing that I think, again, you talk about, will this be addressed in rulemaking or even a cleanup bill? If you have 14 full-time employees and then in the summertime you hire three more and you've gone from a non-paying employer to now a paying employer with 14 full-time and three part-time, what's the impact on you? Do you immediately have to Do you pay only for the 3 months that you have more than 15 employees? Is there a recoup where you collect the entire year? All these things, it's not clear to businesses what the ramifications for that are.
Very, very good questions. And it actually leads me to my next question. Who's eligible for the benefit? I mean, you mentioned that someone had to earn approximately $6,000 in the prior four quarters. Are there other requirements that are in place, or is that the only one?
That's really the only financial requirement, that you have benefits and earnings at about $6,200 in the first four quarters of the year. Six times the state's average weekly wage over the previous four quarters, so roughly $6,000. There is a hiring requirement or a term of service with an employer in order for you to have your job protected. So if you work for an employer for 120 days, and then you toll your right to take your leave, you toll the act to take your leave, your job is protected, and the employer must return you to work upon the completion of the use of the leave. And he or she has to hold that job open and pay you all your benefits while you're out that you would have ordinarily been entitled to if you were working there. If you take your leave 3 weeks after you go to work for the employer, and make no mistake, you can't do that under the law. Their only penalty is that your job isn't protected. So the employer could say, geez, you're a great worker, but I can't afford to have this position. I just hired you. I was counting on you. I'm going to fill your position in permanently. But what's not clear with that is, does the employer, and it appears that they do, they have to maintain benefits for the 12 weeks of that employee, even if you're replacing them for that employee, even if you're replacing them. And then no one wanted to get into the argument, if you permanently replace that person and they then apply for unemployment insurance, does that impact the employer's experience rating? Again, completely unknown. And despite our urgings to the proponents try and address this issue, nobody did. So we don't know about those two things, but those are the real requirements. There's a length of service, and then there's an earnings requirement.
And when you use the term benefits, that they, you know, if you did terminate employment, but you'd still have to provide benefits, do you mean like health insurance, or what do you mean by benefits?
Yeah, if for at least the 12 weeks, it would be your health insurance, 401k, anything that you would be receiving as a benefit while employed at the employer's place of work, you would be entitled to receive for the length of stay that you are out on paid family medical leave. Now, when that 12 weeks is up, you don't necessarily have to continue those benefits, but for at least those 3 months, you would. That's how we read and interpret the law.
So sticking in on that kind of benefits dialogue, currently employees have rights to leave if they're above a certain size. So in Maine, if you have 15 or more employees, you have to provide unpaid family medical leave. And under federal law, if you have 50 or more employees, you have to provide unpaid federal FMLA. Is Maine's law in addition to, like, can you stack the two leaves, or can they, or do they run simultaneously?
That is a great question. I think prior to the enactment of the bill, we were told that you couldn't take both. You couldn't stack both leaves on top of each other. But in reviewing the law and looking at the actual language, I think there are some people who aren't so sure that's still the case, that a case could be made that you could take 12 weeks of unpaid leave and 12 weeks of paid leave and 10 weeks of unpaid leave under the state law. So I think that will need to be addressed through either a cleanup or a rulemaking situation. But the language is ambiguous. You're the attorney. You may agree with me or disagree with me on that.
Yeah, no, I do think that there's ways in which it can be read that, you know, there's a stronger entitlement to leave under one statute as opposed to the other, and that the two can't be reconciled. Specifically, my current reading of the bill, again, without legislative cleanup or rulemaking, you know, there's language that says that the shortest increment of time in which FMLA can be taken is in 8-hour buckets. And we all know, you know, anyone who's been in the HR position for any length of time knows about intermittent leave and how intermittent leave works and the requirements under federal law. So there are, I think, places within the statute itself that are directly at odds with federal rulemaking concerning the federal FMLA. And I think that's going to, at least at this time, create some confusion for individuals. And it's definitely my hope that rulemaking will clarify that some. You know, but as we're talking about this, is there, we've kind of like talked about the benefit itself, we've talked about the statute, but one of the things we haven't talked about is there an alternative? I mean, is an employer required to participate in this program, or could they arguably create their own paid leave program or simply rely upon a short-term disability benefit program that they maybe already have provide that they're already providing to employees?
Well, if you go under intent and legislative intent, the intent is that that an employer will have the option of going to a private plan that meets all the goals and requirements of the state plan and paying for that, or adopting the or paying into the state funded plan and allow the state to do it. However that's going to look like, and we haven't even talked about that yet. So it appears that the intent from the legislature is that private plans will be allowed under the law, but they must meet all the requirements of the law. And not all plans that are currently offered do that. Some don't even aren't even close. So an employer would have to look at purchasing. They don't, and no one knows what that those private plans, what that looks like. That's all subject to rulemaking. And so no one knows that if you can even buy one, and we were told you couldn't buy one that looked like this right now in the state of Maine, but people want to offer them. So that once the rulemaking process is done, it's hoped that there'll be a clearer path for businesses to decide, okay, I'm going to go with a private plan versus I'm going to stay with a state plan. But here's going to be remain the problem. If you're a low wage earner under this program, and this is specifically designed for this, then you're going to make out well on this. Your benefits are going to be pretty close to what you're, and may even be higher than your current weekly salary. But if you're a high wage earner, then you're probably going to lose out because you're never going to make more than 66% of your benefits. And there are employers today who provide 100% of the employee's wages, who are high wage earners. So that issue is going to need to be addressed by employers who are looking to, you know, provide a better plan for their higher wage earners through a private plan.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss. Take it to Moody's. Collision Center.
M-O-O-D's.
talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly you're sideswiped, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Peter Gore, Senior Government Relations Specialist at Main Street Solutions. And today we're talking about the newly enacted Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and key information that employers need to understand as they navigate future compliance with the law. Prior to the break, we spent some time talking about the benefits themselves, eligibility, and whether or not an employer could potentially offer a plan that would provide comparable benefits, with the understanding that, you know, right now, January 2024, we're unaware of kind of a plan that would be able to provide the same level of benefits, especially considering the fact that we're still waiting on rulemaking to truly understand what those benefits are. I mean, Peter, what rights do employees have when they're out on leave or using paid family medical leave benefits? Because I think that also plays a role in what does the program look like, either private or using the state program, making sure that rights that employees are entitled to are maintained in either situation.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, employees have the right if they are if they're taking leave after being employed for 120 days to a return to their job, and the employer has to maintain that job or a position equivalent. In terms of right to the leave, the law appears to be, open. Wide open to access to leave. There is a two-sentence hardship exemption, which a lot of people have pointed to as a way for employers to say, this is going to present a hardship for me. There's a notice section, so an employee has to give notice. But if the employee gives notice and the employer says, this is a hardship for me, it stops right there. It doesn't say, and I need you to not take your leave, or I'm going to tell you you can't take your leave. It doesn't say that, and there's nothing in the law that gives the right of the employer to deny the leave. In fact, it basically, once the employee is given their notice that they're going to take the leave, it's entirely possible the next time the employer realizes the employee is out on leave is when they don't show up for their shift or their work. So there's really no rights that an employer has to say to somebody, this is a terrible time for me. You can't go out. I need you to postpone this for a month or 6 weeks or whatever. You can't do that under this law. And a lot of people are saying, this is what we did for small businesses. It's eyewash at best. One of the biggest issues we had and this coalition of business associations that I worked with on behalf of the chamber was to try and tell people that there is nothing in this law that addresses absenteeism for businesses. And for the first time ever, businesses with 15 or fewer employees are going to be subject to a family medical leave law that they are ill-equipped to both administratively deal with, but also to replace workers. There's a workforce shortage now. And if you can't find a full-time employee, you're certainly not going to find somebody willing to take a job for 12 weeks while that person is out on protected leave. It's not going to happen. And it's going to be a real problem. And the hardship exemption that people point to, it's just not helpful.
So kind of similar line of questioning. I mean, currently the way that the law is set up, at least without the, we don't have the benefit of regulations yet. But is there a possibility that an employee could be terminated for a no show, no call, right? They've missed 2 or 3 days of work. The employer terminates them based off of a no show, no call policy. And then a week or two later, that employee files for FMLA leave and is granted paid Family Medical Leave Act. I mean, is that a possibility under the current law as you read, with the understanding we don't have the regs, but as you read it right now, is that a possibility?
I would say absolutely. If you look under section 850D, section 3, there's a line that says notification of employer. And it very specifically says the administrator shall notify the relevant employer within 5 business days of a claim being filed pursuant to this address, this subchapter. Filing of application. An individual may file an application for family leave benefits or medical leave benefits no more than 60 days after the before the anticipated start date of family leave and medical leave, and no more than 90 days after the start date of family and medical leave. So very clearly, it envisions that one could file for leave after you've started taking it.
And 90 days, not just like a week or two, but potentially 90 days
later. Yeah.
I mean, in that same vein, does the employer play a role in determining eligibility, or under the statute, is it all left to a third party?
No, there's no role for the employer to determine eligibility, or quite frankly, even to request proof of eligibility in the current law. All the employee does is toll their rights to the administrator. It appears that there's no right now, absent rules or any kind of change in the statute, there's no communications between the administrator and the employer until that person doesn't show up for work.
And it's interesting. I mean, so as a labor and employment attorney, one of the aspects of this that I am struggling with is kind of, yes, it's helpful that a third party is going to be administering this and determining eligibility, you know, that you're going to have this agency kind of that's going to determine eligibility. But there's this timing issue, Peter, that you've brought up. But there's also duties and obligations, at least for employers with 15 or 50 or more employees, depending on, you know, which size they are. This doesn't eliminate obligations under those statutes, which means that you are still going to have the obligations to provide federal FMLA notice, potentially state FMLA notice, get the documentation back. So you're going to be, in a lot of ways, asking employees to do double the amount of work, at a time in which, in a lot of situations, you know, when they're either caring for someone with a health condition, when they're dealing with their own health condition, where it is difficult to get responses from employees, and now we're asking them to double up on this paperwork. And I think we're going to see a lot of companies, unfortunately, that are just going to kind of push federal requirements to the side and focus in on this paid requirement. So from my perspective, I suspect that we're going to see a lot more technical violation of FMLA rules, which have very specific notice provisions and documents in which employers have to provide to employees about rights and responsibilities. But currently, there's nothing in the program, and correct me if I'm wrong, that would relieve employers of any of those obligations, correct?
I agree with you. I think perhaps more troubling at this point is the lack of a roadmap for an employers to really know what their obligations are under the paid family medical leave stuff. I mean, employers with more than 15 employees know what they have a roadmap for how the state act operates. If you have more than 50 employees, you know how the federal and the state act operate. But in this situation, there's very little guidance in the law for employers. And there's a whole lot of rights for employees when it comes to taking the leave. And I don't know if rulemaking alone is going to bring the kind of clarity that's going to be necessary for employers in this situation. We'll have to wait and see.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetti's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Peter Gore, Senior Government Relations Specialist at Main Street Solutions. And today we're talking about the newly enacted Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and key pieces of information that employers need in order to understand future compliance with the law, including kind of where we find ourselves currently and things that should be at top of mind as they plan for the future of employing people kind of within the state of Maine. I mean, Peter, I'm sure there's some people who already have this on their radar and have been following the enactment of paid leave. There's some who I'm sure today, you know, a lot of things are coming at them for the first time. if people want to have a voice or they want the Department of Labor to understand maybe how this new statute is going to affect them, do you have any words of wisdom that you could share more generally?
I do. In case folks haven't caught on to the joke in all this, a lot of what's going to happen is going to be contingent on rulemaking that the Maine Department of Labor is going to undertake in 2024. And to the department's great credit, they are interested in hearing from people that are going to be impacted by the law. And not unlike what they did with earned paid leave, they are going to go out and conduct listening sessions. Instead of actually physically going to a dozen sites around the state, they're going to hold four virtual listening sessions starting in January. So on January 25th, and then again on February 1st, February 12th, and February 28th, the department will hold Zoom listening sessions for an hour and a half from 5:30 to 7 o'clock. So that's four different listening sessions, again, on the 25th, the 1st, the 12th, and the 28th. I would highly, 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 highly recommend that businesses tune into this and provide the department with comment about the issues. There is more information that they will be distributing, I think, to businesses. I think they're hoping that business groups like NFIB and the Maine State Chamber and local chambers get this information out to their businesses as well as to the various employee advocacy groups. But it will be very important for business, for the department to understand the real world impact on employers and how this, not just the cost, the 1% tax is one thing, but it should be very evident that much of how the actual administrative operation of this plan will go forward is unclear. It's not settled by law, and the department is going to have to figure it out, and they're going to need business input so businesses can adapt successfully to this model.
Yeah, and I mean, if none of those dates work, so first, if you miss the dates, definitely go on Maine Department of Labor's website. They are doing a very good job of updating information regarding the Maine Paid Family Medical Leave Act and providing a roadmap as to kind of when we should see different things. Additionally, as Peter pointed out, contacting any industry focus groups in which you may be a member of or a partner with is also helpful because, as Peter said, you know, there's a lot of unknowns here, and this is an opportunity for all Maine employers to have a voice in what the statute ultimately, I say the statute ultimately looks like, but what the regulations interpreting the statute ultimately look like. And with that, Peter, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Any last words of wisdoms or things to add?
Yeah, just let me give folks who are listeners an email address or a link that they can tune into. It's www.maine.gov/labor/PFML. And that is the website that you can get information about the listening sessions and what they're doing.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Peter. It was great to have you on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, as always.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.